Junior Aspirin Records. Audio annotations for the Serving Library. Session number three. Materiality and nothingness. Or the quality of having a physical body. Or keeping a sense of perspective. Part one. Nothing. Matter. Stuff. Something. Nothing is no thing, denoting the absence of something. In non-technical uses, nothing denotes things lacking importance, interest, value, relevance, or significance. Nothingness is the state of being nothing, the state of non-existence of anything, or the property of having nothing.
Okay, one... Wait, everybody start at the same time, ready? One, two, three, four! Matter is a general term for the substance of which all physical objects consist. Typically, matter includes atoms and other particles which have mass. A common way of defining matter is as anything that has mass and occupies a volume. However, different fields use the term in different and sometimes incompatible ways. There is no single agreed scientific meaning of the word matter. Here's how Robert Smithson described entropy. I should now like to prove the irreversibility of eternity by using a Jejun experiment for proving entropy. Picture in your mind's eye the sandbox divided in half with black sand on one side and white sand on the other. We take a child and have him run hundreds of times clockwise in the box until the sand gets mixed and begins to turn grey. After that, we have him run anti-clockwise. But the result will not be the restoration of the original division, but a greater degree of greyness and an increase of entropy. Of course, if we filmed such an experiment, we could prove the reversibility of eternity by showing the film backwards. But then sooner or later the film itself would crumble or get lost and enter the state of irreversibility. According to Alan Wiseman, in his 2007 book, The World Without Us, the forms of art that would survive the longest, should human beings disappear from the planet and nature be left to take its course, would be those made of bronze or ceramics. Which makes you think, doesn't it?
The material of music is sound and silence. Integrating these is composing. I have nothing to say, and I am saying it.
A synonym for a thing is an object. In English, the word object is derived from the Latin objectus, with the meaning of to throw or put before or against. As such, it is a root for several important words, such as objectify, to materialize, objective, a future reference, and objectivism, a philosophical doctrine that knowledge is based on objective reality. In epistemology, a branch of philosophy concerning itself with the study of knowing, it is used as a technical term, where object in a strict sense is used to refer to independent being. In a general sense, it is any entity subjective or objective. Thus, objects are things as diverse as the pyramids, Alpha Centauri, the number 7, the disbelief in predestination, and the fear of dogs. The pragmatist Charles S. Peirce defines the broad notion of an object as anything that we can think or talk about. Posited object or event that is known, if at all, without the use of the senses. The term is generally used in contrast with, or in relation to, phenomenon, which refers to anything that appears to, or is an object of, the senses. In ancient philosophy, the noumenal realm was equated with a world of ideas known to the philosophical mind, in contrast to the phenomenal realm, which was equated with a world of sensory reality known to the uneducated mind. Modern philosophy has generally denied the possibility of knowledge independent of the senses, and Immanuel Kant gave this point of view its classical version, saying that the noumenal world may exist, but it is completely unknowable to humans. In Kantian philosophy, the unknowable noumenon is often linked to the unknowable thing in itself, or Ding and Sij. Although how to characterize the nature of the relationship is a question open to some controversy. Woody Allen, in his Critique of Pure Dread, holds that in formulating any philosophy, the first consideration must always be, what can we know? That is, what can we be sure we know, or sure that we know we knew it, if indeed it is at all knowable? Or have we simply forgotten it and are too embarrassed to say anything? Descartes hinted at the problem when he wrote, "My mind can never know my body, although it has become quite friendly with my legs." By knowable, incidentally, I do not mean that which can be known by perception of the senses, or that which can be grasped by the mind, but more that which can be said to be known, or to possess a knownness or knowability, or at least something you can mention to a friend. Can we actually know the universe? I mean, my God, it's hard enough finding your way around Chinatown. The point, however, is there anything out there? And why? And must they be so noisy? Finally, there can be no doubt that the one characteristic of reality is that it lacks essence. That is not to say it has no essence, but merely lacks it. The reality I speak of here is the same one Hobbes described, but a little smaller. Therefore, the Cartesian dictum, "I think, therefore I am," might be better expressed, "Hey, there goes Edna with a saxophone!" So, then, to know a substance or an idea, we must doubt it, and thus, doubting it, come to perceive the qualities it possesses in its finite state, which are truly in the thing itself, or of the thing itself, or of something or nothing. If this is clear, then we can leave epistemology for the moment. If you could see through my eyes, we'll be right back. Part 2. The Body in Drudgery. Getting By and Making Do. So we might as well just get on with things. Daily grind. Gotta get through it somehow. We'll be right back. human, like the rest of them.
Same old thing.
We forget this sometimes, when considering the work of artists, writers and thinkers. We tend towards a sort of high-mindedness. In art, it's a high-mindedness that manifests itself in a chronic linguistic third-person tic that talks of art as something experienced by others, by people who are somehow over there. The viewer, the audience, the masses. Figures often presumed to have preconceptions or perceptual blocks that need blasting apart. Well, we're all viewers, we're all audiences, we're all part of the mass of humanity. We all need to shit, piss, eat, drink, cry, laugh, masturbate, orgasm, wait for the bus, bump our heads, enjoy a glass of wine, worry about our feet, feel hungry, feel full up, feel fed up, have children, have fantastic days, get headaches, have bad days, feel tired, sneeze, fall in love, get hurt, get bored. In 2002, a reporter for the Los Angeles Times, interviewing the philosopher Jacques Derrida, asked the question, "Should a philosopher have a biography?" To which Derrida replied, "How could a philosopher not have a biography?" Body stepping out, bright lights, attempting to assuage the void with high living.
Emmanuel Kant was a real piss and he was very rarely stable. Heidegger was a boozy beggar who could drink you under the table. David Hume could have consumed Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. And Wittgenstein was a beery swine, was just a slosh to Schlegel. There's nothing Nietzsche wouldn't teach about the raising of the wrist. Socrates himself was permanently thin.
geometry with little of his own free will. Not half of his shiny was particularly ill. Away go they say, just sing it away. Half bread and whiskey every day. Aristotle puts a bag up with a bottle. Onto a spot of his dram. And Granny Day Carver's drunk and fart. I drink, therefore I am. Yes, Socrates himself is particularly missed. A lovely little thing about a bugger when he's pissed.
Of course, one way to handle being the butt of a giant cosmic joke is just to sit back with a nice glass of whiskey and try and forget about it all.
Your house is 'cause I'm stepping out, stepping out. So people get.
mind in inquiry. Sentences on Conceptual Art, written in 1967. Sol LeWitt wasn't joking when he said, "Conceptual artists are mystics rather than rationalists." Of course they are. They're human, like the rest of us.
Thank you.
philosopher Simon Critchley explains that, in Merleau-Ponty's view, true philosophy consists in relearning to see the world. What this might mean is indicated in a wonderful essay on Cézanne that appeared in the year of his death. Merleau-Ponty shows that the paintings of Cézanne, think of his repeated renderings of Mont Saint-Victoire in Provence, do not lead us to some transcendent realm beyond appearance or behind the scenes. On the contrary, Cézanne's art returns us to the world in which we live, but momentarily freed from the weight of habit and the blindness of everyday routine. Philosophy must attempt to do something similar, to return us to what Merleau-Ponty called the perceptual faith of our openness to the world.
What's the ugliest part of your body? What's the ugliest part of your body? Some say your nose, some say your toes. I think it's your mind,
your mind.
I think it's your mind.
All your children are poor, unfortunate victims of systems beyond their control. A plague upon your ignorance, to the great despair of your ugly life.
Where did Annie go when she went to town? Who are all those creeps that she brings around?
All your children are poor, unfortunate victims of lies you believe. A plague upon your ignorance that keeps the young from the truth they deserve.
Part 5. The mind, vertiginous dialect, existential crisis, steering wheel in your head.
Given free will, but within certain limitations, I cannot will myself to limitless mutation. I cannot know what I would be if I were not me. I can only guess me. So when I say that I know me, how can I know that? What kind of spider understands arachnophobia? I have my senses and my sense of having senses. Do I guide them or they?
Beyond the loose, neither compacted nor...
Despite all the energy we might put into, say, appropriation art, cooking the perfect steak, catching the bus, or sending satellites into the farthest reaches of the galaxy, still we can't get away from the fact that we are still just stuff. And that thought can make us feel anxious. The philosopher Slavoj Žižek writes that the ongoing decoding of the human body and the prospect of the formulation of each individual's genome confronts us in a pressing way with a radical question of what we are. Am I that, the code that can be compressed onto a single CD? Are we nobody and nothing, just an illusion of self-awareness, whose only reality is the complex interacting network of neuronal and other links? Come on in.
Scotch with your life, you little fool. Can't win a first place prize that way. The steering wheel inside your head has come apart, but it's no matter if you don't delay and say, come on.
Pattern of my brain is loaded onto a different material support. Which of the two minds is myself? In what does the identity of myself consist if it resides neither in the material support, which changes all the time, nor in the formal pattern, which can be exactly replicated? It's no wonder that Leibniz is one of the predominant philosophical references of the cyberspace theorists. What reverberates today is not only his dream of a universal computing machine, but the uncanny resemblance between his ontological vision of monadology and today's emerging cyberspace community, in which global harmony and solipsism strangely coexist. Society today enacts a strange mind-body split. On the one hand, the tools used by capitalism in order to encourage consumption are based on making people all too aware of their physical flaws and failings, on making people feel they are falling short of an ideal, be it one of physical health and beauty, or one of mental happiness and contentment. On the other hand, capital, as it manifests itself in new technologies and social media, simultaneously constructs a fantastical picture of the world in which, to paraphrase Marshall Berman, all that is solid has melted into air. A world in which we are all Wi-Fi connected, where our social, consumer and financial transactions can be carried out at the touch of a button in a coffee shop. A world in which our social lives exist in a digital ether, disconnected from the messy meat space business of having to share a room with people, talk to other human beings in person, rather than at the safe, mediated distance enabled by laptops and iPhones.
Dark and ponder how I'm fit to make the bottom fall through the floor, and they all fall down. Yeah. It goes. Out of the shadows, barrage of witch tongue, cobras spit over apocalyptic cult, killer cauldron, smoke, stop music, seriously. Yeah. It goes. Can't stop the groove, look stars, clear off them locks, relentless rob movement for the knock, meter that G-spot body rock, connected to everything you want, ever did want, we got it, why not come get us to get in that hole and watch me drop this cold guillotine death sentence. Yeah. It goes, guillotine. Hidden all between and beneath every fragmented figure of speech. Time to reverse whenever the beat causes my jaws to call. The screen flashing red, can't see shit ahead. Spinning exorcists like planets, out of orbit off the edge of my axis, ripping the doors to form more than all that's ever been said. Yeah. Tie the cord, kick the chair when you're dead. Yeah. It goes. Head of a trick in a bucket, body of a trick in a bag, and thrown in the fire like fuck it, gotta burn it before it goes bad. But too many times been disgusted by the stench of rotting such a drag. Get broke by the street like bloodstained glass. Choke on these nuts to the very last. Yeah. It goes. Serial number, killing machine. The illest of means. Do an end build on the filthy sound you're experiencing. Yeah. It goes. Guilty! Windows bulletproof, the slipknot fixing rope to noose to the gravestone grinder of cold steel. Compassion the blinds we saw our fields. Yeah. They go to what flows through our veins, blows through our tunnels and rattles our chains. And they all fall down.
To think of information as a kind of material. Jaron Lanier, in his book You Are Not a Gadget, argues that information doesn't deserve to be free, even though Stuart Brand, the founder of the Whole Earth Catalogue, holds that information wants to be free. Lanier says that Cybernetic totalists love to think of the stuff as if it were alive and had its own ideas and ambitions. But what if information is inanimate? What if it's even less than inanimate, a mere artifact of human thought? What if only humans are real and information is not? Of course, there is a technical use of the term information that refers to something entirely real. This is the kind of information that's related to entropy. But that fundamental kind of information, which exists independently of the culture of an observer, is not the same as the kind we can put in computers, the kind that supposedly wants to be free. Information is alienated experience. You can think of culturally decodable information as a potential form of experience, very much as you can think of a brick resting on a ledge as storing potential energy. When the brick is prodded to fall, the energy is revealed. That is only possible because it was lifted into place at some point in the past. In the same way, stored information might cause experience to be revealed if it is prodded in the right way. A file on a hard disk does indeed contain information of the kind that objectively exists. The fact that the bits are discernible instead of being scrambled into mush, the way heat scrambles things, is what makes them bits. But if the bits can potentially mean something to someone, they can only do so if they are experienced. When that happens, a commonality of culture is enacted between the storer and the retriever of the bits. Experience is the only process that can de-alienate information. Information of the kind that purportedly wants to be free is nothing but a shadow of our minds, and wants nothing on its own. It will not suffer if it does not get what it wants. As Samuel Beckett said, "There's a man all over for you, blaming on his boots the fault of his feet."
I want to continue, but I can't go on. I just close my eyes and pretend I'm gone. 'Cause when I woke up, you know I found myself, but my girl, she's nowhere around. Help me, Lord, I think I'm down, but I think I'm down. My legs are dragging on the ground, dragging on the ground. I don't want your love till you find the time to make you love me and I make you mine. 'Cause I got a horse, his name is Joe. You follow me every place I go.
Following the death of his mother, Roland Barthes wrote in his diary that this death fails to destroy me altogether, means that I want to live wildly, madly, and that therefore the fear of my own death is always there, not displaced by a single inch.
I am the question that cannot be answered. I am the lover that cannot be lost. Yet small are the gifts of my servant the soldier. For time is my offspring, pray what is my name? My name is death, cannot all life must turn to me. must come with me. You must come with me. I'll give you gold and jewels rare and all my wealth in store, all pleasures fair, if I may live on glory in your pride. Tarrying here, there is no way. Your time has come that you must away, and you must come.
Why is it okay for artists to invoke the idea of spirituality in some vague New Agey sort of way, but not religion or being religious? As if being spiritual is somehow free of ideological baggage, or more to the point, not as capable of exerting control over people as organized religions are. Why does the search for some kind of spiritual fulfillment in secular art persist? Is the idea that art has nothing to do with faith or religion just a lie we tell ourselves to hide the fact we crave something to believe in? Is it because the subjectivity of art provides the perfect ideological supplement to capitalism? Does God prefer modernist abstraction or Italian Renaissance painting? And is there an afterlife with a gift shop that sells Mark Rothko postcards?
Stuck by this river, you and I, underneath the sky that's ever falling down, 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 ever falling down. Through the day, as if on an ocean, waiting here, always failing to remember why we came. I wonder why we came.
Goethe thought it entirely impossible for a thinking being to think of its own non-existence, of the termination of its thinking and its life.
Enjoy life still. 74 in a couple of weeks, and I couldn't care less what's going to happen to me. I've had a near-death experience twice with this sort of illness, and believe me, it is so peaceful. I don't know if I was drugged or what. I lay there in this great white passageway. Wonderful. And I'd got to walk down this, but I couldn't. I don't know, I was stuck there. And the great white passageway, and a brilliant light at the end, and I thought, oh God, that's my God waiting for me. And this is apparently quite a common near-death experience along the passageway. And I was caught, and somebody's calling, I was going down there, and some fucking cunt woke me up.
I'm on credit. I just can't cry me no more. And my hard knocks came the day she walked right out of the door. Oh, across my floor, I'm on fire. I'm on fire. I just can't cry no more. I can't cry no more. Become a simple bone, and the sun don't shine down on me. What good is the shade I draw? If I had me more nerve, I'd be using me a
Albert Camus held that to die in a car accident is the most meaningless form of death a human being can meet. Camus died in a car accident, aged 44. Part 7. Reconciliation. Acceptance of condition. Intimations of nothing. Bertrand Russell wrote that man is the product of causes that had no prevision of the end they were achieving, that his origin, his growth, his hopes and fears, his loves and his beliefs are but the outcome of accidental collocations of atoms, that no fire, no heroism, no intensity of thought and feeling can preserve individual life beyond the grave, that all the labours of the ages, all the devotion, all the inspiration, all the noonday brightness of human genius are destined to extinction in the vast death of the solar system, and that the whole temple of man's achievement must inevitably be buried beneath the debris of a universe in ruins. All these things, if not quite beyond dispute, are yet so nearly certain that no philosophy which rejects them can hope to stand.
Brothers and sisters, we are gathered here.
Oh, 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 oh.
Therefore, black horses with eyes of flame red, their roses tied with ribbons all around. baby's head.
Whoa.
The bells are ringing, and they say, I'll go and see. Well, I know why they're ringing.
Bum, 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 bum.
They're ringing out for me. Forgive me, I know I've caused you pain. I've replaced your tears with diamonds just to see your face again. The bells are ringing, and they say, I'll to go and see. Yes, I know why they're ringing. They're ringing out for me.
Ashes to ashes and dust to dust.
Eternal nothingness is okay if you're dressed for it.